Hi guys, and welcome back to another True Crime and Makeup Time video. If you're new here, my name is Zara and I post a new True Crime video every single week. So if you want to see more, make sure to hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an upload. Today's case is one that really pissed me off. And I think my feelings are also stemming from the recent tragedy that our country has faced. Just a couple days ago, a man went on a rampage attacking and killing mainly women in a mall in Bondi, Sydney. Just a couple days ago, a man went on a rampage killing and attacking mainly women in a mall in Bondi, Sydney. And, you know, while that is a completely separate case, today's case focuses on the attack of a woman, and it just makes me so angry. Women are attacked all over the world on a daily basis. I feel like every other day I hear about another case where a woman is killed. And while I know that violence against men is also a prevalent issue, today I want to talk about the life of Celeste Manor. Celeste was stalked and killed by a man she barely knew, a man she was kind to just once. Could this case have been prevented? Let's jump in. Celeste Manor was born in Catania, Italy on November 22nd, 1996 to her parents, Tony Manor and Aggie DiMauro. She had an older half-brother named Jaden and a younger brother named Alessandro, and she was close with her immediate and extended family. When she was young, her family moved to Australia, to Melbourne, where Celeste attended Laylor Secondary College. She was a cheerleader in high school and she had a ton of friends. I did not know anyone in Australia did cheerleading. Like, is that a new thing? Because Celeste is close to my age and I'm like, what? When did we start doing that? I didn't have that in high school. After high school, she went on to study criminology and psychology at RMIT University in the year 2015. And then once she graduated, she began working at a place called Serco, which was a call center in Mill Park. And she worked there for a little bit and she eventually rose up and became team leader. According to her mom, Aggie, there was nothing not to love about Celeste. Not only was Celeste gorgeous, she was gorgeous, absolutely beautiful. She was loved by everybody. From looking at her photos, you could tell she really enjoyed life. Like, she looks like she dresses up and she probably loved to dance and she loved to just hang out with her friends. And this might sound weird, but just from these photos alone, like looking at her and the way she spoke on social media, you could tell she was a kind and sweet girl. The way her mom, Aggie, talks about her, you could tell that they were close and she thought the world of her. Celeste was in the absolute prime of her life. She had finished her studies. She got a job, you know, a good position as a team leader now, and she was just headed in a great direction. It was at her job at the call center where Celeste would meet a boy by the name of Chris Risdale. Chris said that time with Celeste was amazing. Her smile would light up a room. Her laugh was infectious, and he was lucky that she would eventually choose him to be her boyfriend. Sometime in the year 2019, while Celeste was working at the call center, she would come across another man by the name of Louis Seiko. Louis had recently been assigned to her team. Soon after, in June 2019, Louis had been put on notice by the company that he had to leave his job. Soon after, in 2019, Louis was put on notice that he had to leave the company. Basically, he was fired. When his last day came, Celeste, being the team leader, the team manager, had to escort Louis out of the building. As they said their goodbyes, Celeste shook his hand and wished Louis well on his future endeavors. That was probably the most time the two of them had ever spent together. Now, Celeste had never mentioned Louis to her mom, Aggie, except on this day. Celeste still lived with her mom, Aggie. So on this day, after she finished work, she rushes home quite upset to tell her mom about what had happened that day. So Celeste tells her mom, oh my God, so there was this guy and, you know, it was his last day as he was fired, and how she felt so bad for him, and she went to extend her hand to wish him well, and suddenly He pulled her in close and planted a kiss on her cheek. She says she went tomato red because she was so embarrassed. Her mom, Aggie, responds, "Oh, come on, you're such a drama queen. You know, he's probably had a crush on you all along and you just haven't noticed." Then the following weekend, it was a Saturday, Celeste once again goes to her mom and she's like, "Oh my God, mom, guess who just messaged me on Instagram? That guy from work. The one who was fired, the one I told you about." The day that Celeste wished Louay well was the day that his infatuation with her began. That first message turned into many more, and his obsession with Celeste quickly grew. Louay would send Celeste messages on Instagram writing about how in love with her he was, how it was consuming him, how he couldn't eat, couldn't sleep, or even look for a job. But soon enough, his messages would turn dark and sexual. So here are some of his early messages. "I'm sorry, but I can't stop thinking about you. I have never felt like this about anybody in my entire life. It's bordering along a OCD. I'm totally infatuated with you, captivated and fascinated by you. You're all I think about. If it was ever possible, I'd give my life and the world to you. I'm so infatuated with you that it's now becoming unhealthy. After leaving you, my productivity and my personal life in my new job has been impacted. This obsession with you, which is a crush, is an addictive and destructive feeling that is interfering with my ability to concentrate, deal with others, and go about my daily routine." So like many people and other women, myself included, who have experienced stalking, Celeste tried to initially deal with Louay herself. She wanted to let him down gently. So she wrote to him, "Hi Louay, those are really sweet words and I appreciate you saying all of that to me. I'm a bit surprised to read this all as it's new to me. As much as I appreciate this, I only feel in a professional way towards you, and I wish you all of the best in your new job and journey." Aside from that brief interaction with Louay where she escorted him out and working with him for a short period of time, I believe he only worked there for over a year. He was employed in April 2018 and then fired in June 2019, so like a year. Louay was basically a stranger to Celeste, and she was a stranger to him. But he was now a stranger who had become dangerously obsessed with her. So who is this guy? Louay Seiko was born in 1984 in Iraq to Christian parents. And this was at the peak of dictator Saddam Hussein's reign. Louay was the eldest of five children and his family was granted a humanitarian visa and allowed to migrate to Australia. And in 1992, his family did migrate to Australia via a Turkish refugee camp. The family lived in Roxburgh Park where Louay grew up, but his family did describe him as pretty much a loner who spent most of his time in his bedroom. Louay was often unemployed, and by the age of 35, when he met Celeste, he had never been in an intimate relationship with anyone. Celeste was the first person that he had ever had any type of romantic feelings towards. In his pursuit of Celeste, his stalking only intensified after that initial rejection from her. No matter what Celeste said, he just refused to quit. And if you guys have ever experienced anything like that, it's wild. Like, you don't get it because you're like, "I literally told you I'm not interested in you." What makes them think like, "Yeah, if I keep harassing her, she's gonna fall in love with me"? It's clearly something, you know? Celeste then blocked him on Instagram, and almost immediately a new Instagram account would pop up and message her. She would then block this new account, and then a new account would pop up. It was never ending. Louay created dozens of fake accounts to continue stalking and harassing Celeste. My question is, what the hell do these guys want? Like, okay, so if she agreed to go out on a date with you and it didn't work out, the date was trash, would he stop? I almost wonder if it's a power game and all they want is a win. They want you to agree. Say yes, go on a date. If he's never had romantic feelings towards anyone before, or if he's never been in a relationship, what makes him think that this is the one? Like, obviously I know that there's more to it. But I almost wonder, like, if you say yes, will they kind of freak out, like, oh shit, you know, and then back away? But then it's such a risky game to play. It's, you can't win. His messages continued over months, like I said, turning sexual, and one message said, Celeste, if you had my body for a day, what would you do with me? Now, I'm guessing there were a lot more sexual messages, but they haven't been released. So all these messages, these darker sexual messages, prompted Celeste to now become firmer in her response to him. I don't believe she ever really responded to him apart from telling him to stop. And this time she said, stop contacting me as this is making me very uncomfortable. Please respect my wishes and stop. So now she's been a little bit firmer, and this is because Celeste did not want this type of attention from a stranger especially, and she never reciprocated these feelings or ever gave him the impression that this was something she was ever interested in. But nothing stopped him. He continued to harass Celeste incessantly. And at this point, after months of this, Celeste was becoming increasingly miserable. And when she started a relationship with her boyfriend, Chris, he witnessed her misery. And this is probably because every time she kind of was doing something normal, she would probably get a message from him. And it's just like constantly on your mind. So you're constantly miserable, wondering when he's going to stop. And although it was a fairly new relationship with Chris, he said that it was painful to watch Celeste stress over receiving these messages. The way she lost sleep and how uncomfortable she really was over the entire situation. Her mom, Aggie, you know, was aware of the situation, and she warned her, like, you know, this guy knows where you work, and the last thing we want is for him to know where you live. Now, Celeste was pretty shocked at this thought, and she was just hoping he was gonna get bored and just drop it. But he didn't get bored. His professions of love soon turned to rage. He then sent a message saying, my impression of you had changed. You're no different to the majority of women. I'll remember you and this lesson for all life, and I will devote every ounce of energy I have to climbing up and proving to the world that I am somebody. That is my promise to you and my final contact with you. Now, this message frightened them. So after 6 months of Celeste dealing with this by herself, they decided it was time to do something. Even though Celeste didn't want to, they went to the police. When they got to the police station, the police didn't help. They simply told them that Louay hadn't committed a crime and there was nothing they could do about it. Just ignore it. Celeste tells the officer, I have been ignoring it for 6 months. The officer then says, well, that's social media. If you don't like it, get off social media. And that was that. The officer didn't even take any notes or write down Louay's name. And I have to say, in my career, I guess, I've come across clients that have been stalked and harassed. And that's kind of often the reaction of the police. I think because there's no clear laws as to what can be done about it, they don't want to do anything about it. I truly believe that continuously harassing messages like these, I'm talking about where the victim rarely responds and the stalker is just relentless, should be seen as a crime and penalized. I know in situations where people are having an argument, for example, like people who are getting divorced, and they just send like horrific text messages back and forth to each other, and one is just sending more than the other in a situation. Those are a little bit harder to classify as a crime because they're kind of provoking each other, right? Like there's a relationship there, emotions, feelings. But when it's a clear stranger or when it's clearly one-sided, where one is clearly harassing another, in clear cases like Celeste's, where her only interaction was telling him to stop, their history of having no history. In those cases, someone like Louay should have been visited by the police, you know, when she reported the stalking incident. And if he breaches an order or something like that, he should definitely be put into jail, even if it is for just a few days. It would hopefully send a message of no tolerance for this kind of behavior. And I know there are barriers like time and space in jail for officers to even apprehend criminals like this, you know? It's just hard because if it's going to save someone's life, isn't that the ultimate goal? So for Celeste, the next 6 months only became worse. Celeste would see Louis' car parked outside her job. He began following her places, and most scary, he found out where she lived. He continued to harass her, sending her derogatory, vulgar, sexually explicit messages, over 140 in total. Now, 6 months later, Aggie and Celeste went back to the police. This time, they spoke with a different officer, and he asks them, "Have you reported this to the police before?" Aggie says, "Yes, 6 months before. Should something have been done 6 months ago?" The police officer responded, "Let's just say some of us do our job better than others." He then told them that Celeste needed to get an intervention order against Louis immediately. It was the first time an officer had taken down Louis's name. Louis was then served by the police with a personal safety intervention order. He was forbidden from contacting Celeste. Celeste and Aggie weren't completely relieved because they knew at the end of the day, this intervention order was just a piece of paper. And Louis had in fact attempted to contest the order and taken Celeste to court, but it was denied. And for an entire month, that piece of paper seemed to work. And that was until August 15, 2020. When Celeste received a 3-page letter from Louis. In this letter, it was sent on Instagram, but it was like a letter. In this letter, he basically is pleading with Celeste to drop the IVO. IVO meaning intervention order. And he writes, "Please see reason, Celeste. Please, Celeste, the ball is in your court. Only you can end this now, Celeste. Please end this nonsense by withdrawing the order and stopping the charges against me for stalking and harassment. And if you make the right choice, Celeste, both of us can move on and we can finally have peace of mind," with a smiley face. Aggie and Celeste could not believe that he breached the intervention order by sending her this letter. Celeste immediately forwarded the letter to the police, and sending the letter meant the police could finally act and charge Louis for breaching the IVO. However, this only aggravated the 35-year-old man. The police arrested Louis at the end of August of 2020 for breaching this order. But despite this arrest, Louis was just released back into the community. The messages continued, but the tone had changed. He was now angry. He writes to Celeste, "I know you reject me. I get it. I'm like dirt to you. I get it. You hate me. I get it." Celeste had told a coworker at this point about the incident, and she had stated to this coworker, "He's really going to kill me." The day after Louis was arrested and released, he purchased a hammer and a knife from the supermarket. And then for 3 months, he just seemingly vanished. Celeste at this point finally believed she had some peace. On November 14th, 2020, Celeste and Chris went on a date. Things were finally getting back to normal. Celeste was feeling happy again, feeling happy in this new relationship with Chris. On that day, this photo was taken. The two of them were so happy and they wanted to make their relationship public. Instagram official, if you will. Celeste told Chris that this picture was going to be her new Instagram profile picture and that she couldn't wait to share it online. So the next day, the Sunday, November 15th, 2020, Celeste posted this photo of the two of them on her Instagram account. This happy photo was the first time Celeste had ever posted herself with a guy since the stalking had begun. And although Louis seemingly vanished, this photo brought him out from the dark. Louis was lurking in the shadows. He hadn't given up on Celeste. During his time in hiding, I guess, he had embarked in an online research effort to track Celeste down. So when I said before that he knew where she lived, I think he just knew like her general suburb. But when he had gone dark, he began monitoring her Instagram account and her location through it, figuring out where she was posting, you know, what cafe she was visiting, things like that. And then he figured out where she lived by following her car home. He then figured out exactly which home was hers because he would drive up and down her street until he saw her car in the driveway. Once he knew her address, he Googled the floor plans to her home and he figured out exactly which bedroom Celeste slept in. And the way he did this was he went through all her photos and he like looked at her background, looked at the room layout until he figured out exactly which room on that floor plan belonged to her. Now he clearly did this because he wanted to know exactly where she was gonna be. He wanted to make contact with her. On November 16th, 2020, it was a Monday, Celeste watched a movie with her mom that night and she made plans for her upcoming 24th birthday. At bedtime, they said goodnight to each other, and at 23 years old, Aggie still tucked her daughter Celeste in bed. Aggie told her daughter she loved her and Celeste responded with, "I love you more." And the two of them went to bed that night, not expecting that to be the worst night of their lives. At around 4 a.m. early that morning, Louis had driven to Celeste's home. He parked out of the front of their home, snuck onto the property armed with his knife and hammer, jumped the side fence, and made his way to Celeste's bedroom window. At 4:10 a.m., as Celeste lay sleeping, completely unaware, Louis smashed her bedroom window with the hammer and jumped in. He then proceeded to brutally stab Celeste in her own bed, and she fought for her life. Aggie woke up to the sound of millions of pieces of glass shattering. She sprang out of bed, screaming Celeste's name, and as she ran into Celeste's room, she saw her daughter there just covered in blood. And there was broken glass everywhere, so she couldn't even lay her down. She just held her. And Louis at this point was gone. CCTV footage from a neighbor actually captured Louis's car fleeing the street. When the paramedics arrived, as they were helping Celeste, they told Aggie to step back as they believed this to be a crime scene, as they had found a knife. Aggie then screams in agony, "Oh my God, he killed her." Celeste was stabbed over 23 times in that short period of time, and it was the wound to her heart that killed her. She suffered defensive wounds on her arms and her forearms as she tried to protect herself. It was later found that it took just 2 minutes and 39 seconds for Louis to arrive at the scene, carry out the murder, and then return to his vehicle and flee. 2 minutes, 39 seconds, and an entire life was taken in 2 minutes and 39 seconds. Following this, Louis then gets rid of his phone. He drives to Mernda Police Station, where he tells the officers she's dead, and then provided them with Celeste's address, and then he asks police to shoot him. He then tells the police officers, "She's dead. She's dead. Go have a look. You know what happened. It's your fault." Louis was arrested and later charged with murder. Celeste Manor was the 45th known victim of violence against women in Australia in the year 2020. Police then went to Louis's home and they searched his laptop. And on the laptop, they found two photos of Celeste and her boyfriend, Chris, a Google search of Chris's name and LinkedIn page, and a search of the bar where they had had their date, Celeste and Chris, the one where that photo was taken. And a few days later, police found a mobile phone registered to Louis, which contained evidence that he was actively monitoring Celeste via Instagram. And on his mobile phone, they also found screenshots of Celeste and Chris. Along with Celeste's family, Chris was one of the many who mourned Celeste in the days after her tragic death. Even though Louay would eventually plead guilty, he used a number of legal loopholes to delay this entire court process for over 3 years. Louay fired his lawyers right before the trial. He represented himself at times, and he disputed the number of stab wounds found on Celeste, claiming to only be responsible for two. He said he only stabbed her twice. So where did all these other wounds come from? Now, he did this so that a coroner would have to come and testify at the trial, which, you know, he'd have to testify as to all his findings, the manner of the wounds, what weapons were used, things like that. And this was all done by Louay to delay the entire process. While awaiting sentencing, Louay was held in solitary confinement where he wanted to remain even when he got his final sentence. It was also clear that all these tactics of Louay were aimed at finding him mentally unfit so that he wouldn't have to face such a harsh penalty. He was then assessed by multiple psychiatrists, and one in particular, his name was Dr. Darji, and he would claim to this Dr. Darji that he was having a hallucination of a figure called Isha, and Isha had told him that he needed to act like a criminal. While in custody, he would pretend to hallucinate about this character, Isha. But Louay's actions when not being assessed for any mental issues showed otherwise. In one particular comment Louay had made, it just shows what a sicko he really is. He told Dr. Darji that when he was contesting the IVO, so when he was disputing it when Celeste originally filed it, when he appeared in court for that, which Celeste was made to appear, which I think it's such a joke. If you're getting an IVO against someone stalking you, now you have to face them in court. Like, it's the stupidest thing. But they were in court for this IVO and Celeste was present in court with him. And he made a comment stating that Celeste was much larger than before, meaning that, you know, she had gained weight. He was clearly insulting her even after her death, which showed a lack of empathy and remorse for what he had done. He really showed no remorse or regret for his actions at all. Eventually, Louay was found by several psychiatric experts to have faked symptoms of mental illness and was eventually ruled mentally fit to stand trial. It was put forth by the prosecution that this photo of Celeste and her boyfriend Chris is what ultimately set Louay off. Seeing Celeste with another man, like physically seeing it, triggered motivations of jealousy, rage, and humiliation on his part. Louay saw Gary's smile in that photo with Celeste as a massive insult, later telling Dr. Darji that he felt that Chris was laughing maniacally at him in that photo. Dr. Darji said that Louay displayed symptoms of the most profound personality disorder he has seen in a person who was not a psychopath. He was described as completely self-absorbed and egocentric and lacked empathy. Dr. Darji actually made a warning in court saying that Louay was likely to reoffend and that the current treatment available in prisons was not sufficient to treat Louay, especially if Louay became attracted to any female prison guards, they could be at risk. Aggie and the rest of Celeste's family wanted Louay to be sent away to prison for life. This crime was clearly premeditated. I mean, he brought a hammer and a knife to Celeste's bedroom to murder Celeste. He approached her in the middle of the night in her own bed. There was no other reason for his actions other than to harm Celeste. This was not a psychosis, a random act. He had planned this. But because he delayed everything for so long, just this year on February 29th, 2024, Justice Dixon told the court that this case did not warrant a sentence of life imprisonment because Louay, the now 39-year-old, had been diagnosed with this extreme personality disorder, which caused a significant impairment of his mental functioning at the time of the offense. The judge then went on to say how she was aware of the devastating impact this crime had on Celeste's family and friends. The Supreme Court sentenced Luis Seiko to 36 years in prison. He had already served three of those and would be eligible for parole after 30 years. At that time, he would be around 65 years old, whereas Celeste was only 23 years old when he killed her. Celeste's entire family was devastated to hear that Luis was not given a life sentence. They couldn't believe that the court had showed him mercy when he had shown Celeste none. Aggie believes the police's lack of action contributed to her daughter's death. Heartbroken over the loss of her daughter, a life taken by violence at the hands of a man who believed he was entitled to her. Now, Aggie has not taken this lightly. She has not stayed quiet. She has called for the electronic monitoring of stalking offenders and believes that Celeste's murder could have been prevented if her killer had been monitored after being served with that intervention order. If he had some tracking on him, you know, after he breached the IVO, most likely he would have not even attempted to come in contact with Celeste. But if he had, there would have been some sort of action. Maybe police could have stopped him prior to him attacking Celeste. When Celeste was murdered, Aggie and her family members called for the Victorian government to tighten laws around stalking offences. In 2020, a petition calling for tougher laws was launched via change.org. Now, while laws and legislations in relation to stalking do exist in Victoria, at least, they're not effectively enforced with a range of loopholes and a lack of education on the police officer's part, leaving many victims and survivors responsible for their own protection, dealing with the stalkers themselves. Aggie stated, "If things had been done so much sooner, before they had escalated to the point that they did, Celeste might have still been sitting here today." Aggie refuses to stop until the laws change, and she promised Celeste that she will bring her justice. I read this paragraph in an article. It's a bit long, but I think it's important. Less than 50% of stalking incidents are reported to the police. In around 77% of those cases, victim survivors endure up to 100 incidents before they make the initial report. Research shows some victims simply don't believe filing a report will lead to a positive outcome or even prompt an investigation. The root cause appears to be a lack of understanding of both the crime and how to manage it, but there are also other factors. Lack of training, limited resources, difficulty obtaining evidence, time constraints, prosecution challenges, and attitudes. It's undoubtedly complex, and stalking reports are often pushed to the side, sometimes with catastrophic consequences. Given that the fight continues despite her killer being behind bars, I do agree that Luis should be in for life. It's shocking that he isn't, and we can only hope that Celeste's murder, along with the never-ending list of women whose lives are taken at the hands of violence, were not in vain. A few years ago when I was 20, I was stalked by this guy. And I mean, it sounds strange, but I was actually stalked twice, like three times if you count like a one-off incident, but I was stalked twice, one by this older guy on the train when I would go to school. Maybe I should make a story time on it because it's crazy that I'm even here today. Sometimes I think about it. But I fainted on the train and this guy dragged me out of the train. And basically after that incident, he stalked me and would, yeah, long story short, he was my first stalker. And then when I was around 20, there was this guy that I had met through a family friend. He was literally like, he was younger than me. He was just like a family friend. And, you know, we had a big group of friends that would go out clubbing and things like that. So my parents were like, "You should invite him. He's so lonely." So I was like, okay. And like, we invited him, my brothers, I, Jay and I. He came to Jay's 21st. And after that, he kind of like became obsessed with me. I had no idea at the time who was doing it, but I kept getting emails and it was just like constant. And me and a couple friend of ours at the time, we're no longer friends with this couple, but a couple friend of ours at the time, we like went deep and tried to figure out who this person was. It's a wild story as well, but we found out it was this guy and then he ended up just denying everything. You know, I never reported that. That went on for a couple months and I never reported that. And I was scared, you know, that he was going to do something and I still never reported that. So it's just crazy that so many of us go through it and like, you just move on, right? You just got to like deal with it. Let me know your thoughts down below, guys. I know this topic can be triggering to some of you, so I'm happy to chat in the comments down below. Thanks so much for watching. I'll see you in next week's video. Besitos. Bye. Also, now I'm so insecure about my eyebrows. So many people leave comments. Okay, not so many people, like a few people leave comments and they're like, what's with her eyebrows? And I'm like, what's wrong with them? I feel like today I did them way too dark because I'm so insecure now and I forgot how to do my eyebrows. I don't know how to do them anymore. I need to go back to the 2016 powder brow.